Live from Issaquah, Washington, this is Deepak Singh.
And from Cambridge, Massachusetts, this is Hari Jairam.
And you're listening to The Coast.
To Coast.
Bio. Podcast.
Hey,
Hari, how are you?
Man, it's been forever, hasn't it?
I tell you, I'm, as I said last time, I'm glad we don't call it a weekly.
I know. I saw some comments from some the DIY bio forums saying a slightly irregular podcast or something like that. And I was like, how true.
Yeah. Buzz Out Loud, their sort of tagline is podcast of indeterminate length. Our tagline should be podcast of irregular recording or, you know, indeterminate time of recording.
Yeah. The highly unscheduled scheduled podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I take complete blame. I haven't been in town.
No. Same here. Yeah, it's funny. Like, but I think both of us have been like crazy busy, and you with I guess you've been traveling, right?
Yeah, I've pretty much three straight weeks on the road, and I'm glad that it looks like for the next month I'm not traveling. So.
Oh, outstanding. Huh. Yeah, we've just been. Finishing up some stuff and getting it ready to send it out, and that's what's taken most of my time. And actually, it's funny, I just realized, like, even, you know, keeping up with what's going on out there became difficult. Like, I would start up friend feed and then my mind would just like tune out immediately because there's so much going on. And I guess we have quite a few stories lined up today, which
Before we jump into stories, I don't know if I told you, I got a Kindle.
Oh, my goodness. DX or the... Oh, wait, no, DX isn't out yet, right?
No, yeah. Kindle 2. I'm the junior user. My primary Kindle is probably still my iPhone.
Oh, you use Tanza on the iPhone?
No, I actually use the Kindle 2 application on the iPhone.
I see.
As well as Tanza. But Amazon just bought Tanza.
Yeah, exactly. So they are the
so
same
I don't know
thing,
that's going to go. But no, we have a real Kindle too. It's great. The first book we started reading on that was the Foundation Trilogy.
And, oh my goodness. All right. Yeah. Hari Seldon. I used to be quite glad because I used to go around telling people, you know, my name's Hari, like Hari Seldon. And of course, only the geeks would get it. But anyway.
and it's kind of funny is, and actually I tweeted about this and blogged about this as well. So it's a good way. It's kind of a unplanned segue into our first story, which is the launch of Wolfram Alpha, which we've talked about before. And the whole world was talking about it in ways that made me cringe because I think people were just not understanding what the what Wolfram Alpha was all about. And I think after they've seen it, they definitely realize it doesn't even pretend to be a Google type, a search engine, period. But the reason it was a good segue was the Foundation series has Encyclopedia Galactica, and the whole idea of Hari Seldon is these psycho historian is capturing human knowledge and collecting a team of scholars and scientists and so on to do that to some extent. And I tweeted about this, and Pierre said, no, Wikipedia is Encyclopedia Galactica, while I was saying, maybe Wolfram Alpha is the Encyclopedia Galactica, the sum total of systematic knowledge in the world. So that is sort of an interesting interesting discussion. But Wolfram Alpha is available. They got hammered, I think, the day they launched and had some trouble staying up and online. You kept getting error messages, but the error message is somewhat cool because I'm trying to think, does it come from HAL? I think it comes from HAL. The error message is from 2001 Space Odyssey.
Space Odyssey,
Yeah, in fact, there's some interesting Easter eggs inside Wolfram Alpha. For example, if you ask it, how many roads should a man walk down or something like that? And the response is the response from the Dylan song.
The Dylan song. That's funny.
And the answer, I think the response is the answer is blowing in the wind. and so on and so forth. And there's, I played around with it. It's the potential is definitely there. It really shines in physical properties and things like that. So, for example, you enter Hooke's Law or Stokes' Law or any of these things. It actually gives you the equation and gives you a form where you can play around with the variables and get, you know, measure the properties of something you want to see. It's great for calculating heat capacities. If you know the symbolic language, you can actually do stuff. And you can actually open the responses in Mathematica.
Right.
If you want to. It in biology and chemistry, it has information, but the information is quite incomplete. It's missing a lot. And that's what this friend feed thread we were just talking about is all about. It's sort of a response. I wrote a blog post about Wolfram Alpha. You know, sort of looking at it as the potential that it has as much as anything else. And I quite honestly, I'm really excited about it. I mean, it's not perfect right now. There's a lot to go, but you can, just looking at the front end, you can see the possibilities of being able to compute results from from data that it exists. You know, for example, you can't do it right now. I would love to be able to do a query like, if I mix 2 moles of ethane with 3 moles of this thing, what do I get out of it? It's not there, but in principle, it should be able to get there at some point. So the thread was more along the lines of in the chemistry space, the kind of incomplete information it has and how we can perhaps get it in there. So hopefully, you know, we'll be able to make some contacts with the Wolfram people and work with them on, you know, if it's systematic knowledge and scientific knowledge, help from the scientific community would help them rather than, and that's my one fear is Wolfram is very much a, everything happens inside Wolfram kind of company. And I hope that doesn't happen in this case because there's no way they can scale that.
Right, right. And it's funny, I was like, I have used Mathematica, right, a little bit here and there. And you could see the kind of, I mean, to me, if I was to, Wolfram Alpha looks exactly like Mathematica. It's almost identical. I mean, with the difference that you have, you can type in natural, you know, queries and it gives you answers. But once you get, you know, the, say sine X, for example, and you get the plot and then you can change the plot a little bit and it'll replot it for you. All that's very Mathematica-esque. And also the engine that's doing the rendering, the quality of the plots and everything looks exactly as good as what you get out of Mathematica. So I think, I mean, to me, this is going to be really cool for education and stuff because, you know, Mathematica is fairly expensive and the licenses don't come cheap. But, you know, so using this, like, especially for mathematical education, not to mention all the other stuff that Wolfram Alpha does. And it seems like they're going to keep it free with a subscription-based model for enhanced features now.
Yeah.
I mean, just what they have right now is really cool. Like, you can give it any function and it'll plot it for you and things like that. Yeah. It's really nice, actually. And it's good because, you know, I guess, who was the guy who did that? We actually talked about his blog post when he saw it first time.
Noah Spivak, I think, right?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
at that time, I too thought it's going to be a little over the top, but now I think it's really a very elegant front end to a lot of its functionality. And I can't wait to see when, you know, we'll have a lot more. There seems to be quite a lot of physical chemistry stuff in there, but
it's good at physical stuff, physics, mathematics, physical chemistry. I think it breaks down in things like organic chemistry, a lot of biology.
Right.
But one of the points I was making in my blog post is that, you know, the best thing Wolfram Alpha could do is make computational thinking and mathematics accessible and cool, you know, and get people interested in those topics because it's not, those aren't areas, but, you know, just being able to play around with Hooke's law and Schrodinger's equation and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, I think Wolfram Alpha has a lot of value for education, for getting people to think mathematically, you know, the computational thinking approach that some people have talked about. So if nothing else, that would be great. But I think if they play their cards right and if they can continue to improve and improve fast because people don't have patience these days, I think they can become a very useful resource. You know, I sort of look at Google, Wikipedia, and Wolfram Alpha as your three-pronged resource for information, and they sort of complement each other.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. The nice thing, though, is that this one is so different from the other two. I think that's what's really cool. So it's
I think that was very important. If it was anything like any of the other two, then it would not work.
And I wonder for how long. I mean, the amount of curation that they needed to have done to have this.
Yeah, and they're nowhere close to being complete. I mean, there's so much missing that I think that's why I think they have to figure out a way to include other people, because there's no way they can scale unless they hire another 1,000 people just to take care of
And I
curation.
think we saw quite a few posts, right, on friend feed and so on about hooking in, you know, bioinformatics data, for example, into something like this. I mean, I know that I haven't really looked on at Wolfram Alpha, but Mathematica, for example, has a lot of you know, GenBank and actually definitely PDB data that you have in there. So you can do things like calculate molecular weight of proteins. I mean, things that are already in other databases, but it's just convenient to have it all right in there. And I'm sure, I mean, the
Yeah, I think they have protein stuff in there. They have structures. They have the human genome, but that's the only genome they have. They don't have any other species from the looks of it. So that's a limitation. I think the other thing that people were a little concerned about was the fact that their citations are somewhat opaque. When they give you the source, they say Wolfram 2009 curated data, and that's about it. And sort of what were the sources for that? Now, there's some things that, you know, Planck's constant and gravitational constant and laws, I don't think those need to be cited. But there's other pieces of information where I think if they, because they're targeting the scientific community, their citability to some degree, their citability will have to their cite the way they cite will have to be a little more transparent. Yeah, but you know, definitely, it's something that all of us will be tracking very carefully over the next 6 months to a year. Because it'll take a while for, you know, it's a monumental task what they're trying to do. It's not even close to being finished. I mean, I would say it's only about 5-10% there. And the natural language interface also has to evolve, because it is a little, how do I put it, quirky.
You know, I just
It,
saw
it's,
the
it's, it's a
download
little
as PDF in
temperamental.
Live Mathematica. I totally missed that until you told me about it. That's really cool, actually. Talk about, you know, a very nice way to introduce people to their software tool as well. You know, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, actually, I noticed that the personal Mathematica edition is now 300
Yeah,
bucks.
that's
That's
like buying
not too
Photoshop
bad.
or something, right? I mean, it's. Yeah, I
That's
don't know.
cheaper than buying Photoshop.
Yeah. Is it? Okay, yeah.
Photoshop is like 600
Man,
bucks or
this
something like
is.
that.
I think
Yeah. Something
that's
like that.
when,
It's
you know.
pretty
Well,
expensive.
you know, this is all one good way to get into a platform like Mathematica, I guess, to hook people in, and then slowly, as you get more used to Wolfram Alpha,
Yeah.
you'll be hoping for, you know, using Mathematica. So I can see in many ways
Yeah.
this is a really cool thing. I can see it now.
Yeah, I applied for my
Oh
API.
yeah,
It's
okay.
developers permission. Obviously, I don't think they've released it yet, so I don't have it. We'll see. Would love to get my hands on that API. So let's sort of moving away from the world of Mathematica to the world of chemistry. We have a bunch of chemistry-related stories here. I'd like to talk about a blog post by Rich Apodaca, where he sort of channeled another community that I know I really like, Stack Overflow, and he talks about the possibilities of if we can learn from Stack Overflow and try and build chemistry communities. And you know, it's a relatively small blog post where he talks about Joel Spolsky's talk. I forget where the talk is from. And what he talks about is, you know, you might think that Stack Overflow for chemists might work really well, but I think this is something we've talked about before. But you know, he sort of reillustrates that. And the reason I think we brought this topic up, and we keep bringing this particular subject up, is because every week I see a blog post or a post on friend feed on Twitter saying, you know, here's the latest community for life scientists, or even people who are on friend feed and saying, et cetera, saying what would be the ideal requirements for a scientific community network, et cetera, be. And the way the Rich comes at it from the point of view that says chemists operate in a very different kind of cultural environment than software developers, and any system that mm-hmm. ignores the difference would almost certainly fail. But you know, he basically says, and this is something a lot of us have talked about, you can't just take something in the software community and just translate it broadly to a scientific community. I think it'll work for informaticians, for example, which is why most of us sort of flock to these sites anyway. But trying to build a general community for chemists or biologists is hard, especially because they're even more fractured within themselves.
Yeah, I think it's along the lines of, you know, our there will be crowds and there will be crowds thing. You know, there's very few skills that are universally translatable amongst all scientists to allow for a big community like Stack Overflow. And I think that's a significant issue in that, I guess maybe if you had, there are some skills that if I was to think of the life sciences that all life sciences need, that's like molecular biology, you know, for example. But even there, right, I mean, there's molecular biology communities, but there's so much wisdom locally available that you're probably less likely to, you know, go on to a forum. I mean, I know there are forums on the web that have, you know, and they are all email-based, old-fashioned forums. And, you know, the as you said, I don't think you can translate it over. I agree with you. There's another thing that actually I remember Chris Lasher and I had tweeted back and forth a little. And you don't really need to reinvent the wheel. Like, for example, in crystallography, you have the CCB4 bulletin board, which I've talked about numerous times. Now, I don't ever wish that, you know, we start using a Stack Overflow-like interface, because the CCB4BB is like 14, I don't know how many years old. It's old. And it works well. You know, if you have a question, that's where you go. Now, there have been numerous times that people have talked about moving to Gmail, to Google Groups, to Yahoo Groups, and the community has resisted it because it's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know? So I really can't see the case for a Stack Overflow unless, say, there's a new field starting off tomorrow and, you know, you seed it on a Stack Overflow-like interface. So, say, you know, if any of us starts a new field, then is when you start, you know, kind of from the get-go, you adopt a Stack Overflow-like interface. But yeah, I don't see these communities doing very well because of how fragmented most of our skills are and how for most things you have the expertise available locally, and for the rest of it, you already have a small community somewhere on some corner of the web.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a topic we'll keep trying to talk about, because to some extent, I think it's people trying to find a problem for a solution
for a problem. I mean, yeah.
How does that? What's the solution for a problem?
Oh, sorry, problem for a solution. Yes, I get you.
So, yeah, something along those lines. I'm too tired to think straight. Yeah, I mean, I think it's something we'll keep trying to talk about, and maybe, you know, I don't think the answer is no. Mm-hmm. But we have to figure out exactly what that sweet spot is.
You know, I got introduced to Stack Overflow thanks to you, and it is a great resource. I mean, there's no denying that.
Oh, it's amazing.
Especially for things that, like, for example, Git and so on, right? Almost always now, I just look on Stack Overflow. I don't look at Google, you know. It's easier to find the solution within Stack Overflow instead of going to Google and looking for it. I mean, if I do go to Google and look for it, the top five hits happen to be from Stack Overflow.
Well, and the good news is that if you don't know the answer,
exactly,
you can't find an answer, you just ask another question and you'll get one.
Of course, I must say, as a beginner, their whole authority reputation thing is a little intimidating because, you know, but they want you to work on building up your credibility, I guess, within the community, and that's understandable.
Yep, absolutely. And sort of staying with the world of chemistry and going along, there's some interesting, I won't say a disturbance in the force per se.
Strengthening of the force, right?
But Yeah, so ChemSpider, which is one of the, which I really, really admire the work that Anthony Williams has done building open API accessible chemistry, chemical information website called ChemSpider. And ChemSpider just got acquired by the Royal Society of Chemistry. And my initial reaction to that was, what? Partly because the Royal Society of Chemistry is based in the UK and Anthony is based in the US. Of course, he is English, if I'm not mistaken, or he's British. Yeah, so looking at what he has to say, what he said about it, and so on, I think it's a great thing because A, it allows ChemSpider to continue without having, Anthony doesn't have to worry about making his bills anymore because he was pretty much a bootstrap startup. So, and it's gone from nowhere a few years ago to becoming such a phenomenal internet resource. I mean, I keep pointing out to people that when things like ChemSpider become mainstream, the chemistry community, where there's a lot of licensed proprietary information sources, is going to change significantly. There's going to be like almost a overnight when that inflection point hits. Behavioral change in the chemistry community.
Yeah, it's one of the rare examples of such websites that are built by individuals which are so incredibly effective that I'm glad, and I was reading his post about how he's been approached several times and finally he found an institution which he felt comfortable with that won't, like acquire it and shut it down or something like that. And so once it came along, he said yes, and now the RSC, the Chem Spider, is going to be a RSC site. And I think, for all of us building sites, this is a very good, model to follow. Is you just build up your site, make it so good that the traffic alone will, get more people on. I must admit, I haven't used ChemSpider much other than once or twice when I had to do some lookups and so on chemical related chemicals and CAS IDs and things like that. But yeah, I can't wait to now check it out now that, it's so, it seems like it's even more mainstream. So it's going to be quite interesting to see. Also along these lines, there's so many of these PubMed clones, right? I can't wait for, one day somebody to put a spin on PubMed that is so incredibly good to use and fun to use that, say NCBI goes and whatever quote unquote acquires them or something, that'll be really neat.
Yeah, I don't know if NCBI
Well, I
is in
mean, the
the
NCBI
acquiring
is all,
game.
I would think the same as the Royal Society of Chemistry, right?
Is it? No, I think the Royal Society is just a
I guess the
society
NCBI
as
is
opposed
government,
to
yeah, that's
the
true, yeah.
NCBI, which is a government. Yeah, but I'm thinking of, Public Library of Science, for example, or some nonprofit society could easily do that. And in some ways, it's an interesting exit strategy because you have a startup, a commercial startup, that's been acquired by a nonprofit institution. It's an interesting way of going forward, and I think it's a pretty good one,
Yeah, it's
actually. So yeah, I'm very curious to see how this evolves and the impact it has on on the chemistry communities in general. It's just fascinating that this happened, and I have to chew on it a little more because I do feel that ChemSpider is going to play a really, really important role in the future of structural chemistry. So it'll be it's good days. It's congratulations to Anthony for pulling this off. I mean, he absolutely deserves it.
outstanding. So some more chemistry, I guess.
Yeah, it's our chemistry episode today.
No problems at all. My ancient undergraduate past will definitely, hopefully, allow me to contribute my two cents. But so the next story, actually, I must say, it sounds like chemistry, but it's really, really cool. And this is from another very good Chemi-Informatician, and this is Rajarshi Guha from Indiana University, right?
He's okay. Somewhere else now, right? He moved from Indiana. I'm trying to figure
yeah.
out where he
so,
is. Keep talking.
Rajarshi,
I'll track it down.
Actually, for anybody wanting to, you know, get into chemical informatics or just informatics in general, he does a lot of mostly chemical informatics. He has a extremely good blog, which we'll link to in the show notes. And this particular post talks about doing chemi informatics with Hadoop and EC2. Now, of course, I guess last week we talked about Pierre Liedenbaum's Hadoop experiments as well, where he was bringing up, you know, a single Hadoop, Deepak, correct me if I'm using the wrong terminology, instance, right, where he was using it for some computation. And today...
Well, he was
on his
yeah,
laptop.
I mean,
correct,
Pierre
correct.
Was running it on his laptop. Right?
And whereas yeah. Rajarshi, it seems, is actually launching like a 10 node Hadoop cluster or something, right? And he tells you how to set it up, you know, and then goes on to actually running like a bunch of, you know, a test kind of job on his cluster. And says how it's really, you know, it's a 10-node cluster, and it barely costs him like 80 cents or something to run this job. And even though the experiment didn't actually highlight something, you know, cool algorithm or method, it just, what I guess he wants to prove, I mean, kind of establishes that it's really easy to use something like Hadoop and the MapReduce framework to parallelize your jobs, and it's so approachable now. And I must admit, I don't know much about Hadoop or any of those MapReduce implementations, but just the ability of being able to do this at, you know, to play with this technology at like, you know, for a few cents, it's very, very powerful and enabling, I would imagine. So what's your take, Atom? Did you actually try? I'm sure you've tried a bunch of this
yeah,
stuff.
So... Yeah, I mean, I come from it from a slightly different perspective, partly because
right,
I
exactly.
live and breathe this stuff in the day these days. I actually, last week I was at University of Maryland, where I was talking in a Hadoop-centric context. So I was in the morning. I gave a talk to a bunch of VC types, and then later to the computer science department. And the two speakers were myself and Christoph Bisciglia, or Bisciglia, I think is how he pronounces it, of Cloudera, and formerly of Google. So, and if you notice, Rajarshi used the Cloudera army for this. So yeah, it was, and I also met Mike Schatz and Ben Langmead and other people at UM, University of Maryland, who are doing a lot of Hadoop EC2-based work. In general, what I really like about watching Pierre do this, and then Rajarshi, and we've talked about how these two are capable of going from 0 to 100 in 2 days and get going, is the fact that you have, and people playing with EC2, I mean, Matt Wood has an editorial in Bioinformatics on cloud computing, and his talk at RailsConf was on cloud computing as well, is this whole concept of available resources, trying out new methodologies, being able to try them quickly, prototyping them, and making them available for other people. Just this whole whole idea of, okay, we have these resources available to us. How can we make use of them, and how can we help other people make use of them? And I think that's sort of a trend. You know, that's one reason I am where I am. That I think is just going to expand. And the more I delve into the world of Hadoop, and MapReduce in general, I think it's a fascinating area to look at. Actually, Christoph used an analogy which I really liked. He compared Hadoop to a freight train. So he says, you know, you have databases that are ideal, optimized for certain tasks, and that's your Ferrari. But there's all this data around which you need to crunch and analyze and basically compute on and do things. And Hadoop provides a very phenomenal platform to do that, especially when you have lots of data and you have access to resources, you know, where you can spin up a few hundred nodes if you wanted to. just for the heck of it. And the advantage of utility computing is you don't need to own those. Anybody like Rajarshi, let's say, gets funds to do it, can take advantage of that. So, you know, and those are the trends I really like. I mean, it's great to see real applications in bioinformatics, in chem informatics, showing up, which take advantage of these frameworks. And, you know, people are starting to think about these new sort of paradigms for computing, as opposed mm-hmm. to just writing some MPI code or trying to use LSF or so on. I mean, those days, I think, are behind us and should go further behind us. I'm increasingly convinced of that. So, yeah, I mean, you know, people like Rajarshi and Pierre are sort of pushing the envelope. The fact that they do it in fairly informal settings and then blog about it and make all this knowledge available to people is what makes it
really,
even better.
Really, we should be glad for such blog posts. And I think that's where, you know, like, I guess they're called evangelists, but it's even more heartening because they're doing it because, you know, this is what, I mean, what they like doing. And it's not like they're at, you know, one of these companies evangelizing a product. They're just evangelizing this technology because it makes so much sense. Yeah. And every one of their posts actually is very easy to, well, not easy, but it is very approachable to learn from because it really goes from start to the finish in a way that made sense to them. And for some reason, it connects more to, you know, my style of learning than if I was to look at, I was trying to look at some developer documentation for, you know, S3 REST calls. I mean, it wasn't bad, but, you know, I was just compare that with something that, you know, say Pierre or Rajarshi wrote, because I guess they're coming at it from slightly on the outside. The it's more approachable, you know, to read that.
Yeah, and I think what it does is also because their blogs are read by a certain class of people, you'll have more people getting interested in these technologies as opposed to
this
being
is how
told
it's
by
done,
the computer science folks. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to even more posts along these lines. You know, sort of while we're on the chemistry subject as well, have you taken a look at some of the work that Rich Apodaca is doing?
Not other than, you know, some of the stuff he'd done before.
So he has all these really cool applications that he's writing as his startup now. There's a thing called Chemcaster, which he's written. It's all Rails-based applications, which sort of make chemical structures like a first-class web entity. And basically, it's a service. So if you know, between ChemSpider, which is an open chemical structure resource, and then Chemcaster, which is a commercial structure resource, but everything is a service now, as opposed to buy my package, build a library, put it in, you know, create a library of compounds. So there are all these new trends that are sort of been around in the web world for a while are sort of creeping into our world.
Wow. I'm just looking at Chemcaster. It looks really slick. It's very nice.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Rich does good design, I think. It is really good.
You know, I totally missed a lot of Rajarshi's stuff. I guess we need to get back in and talk about this. But I'm actually looking at substructure searching using Hadoop. And that's an area that really is fascinating because it's such a, you know, obvious problem that we all have. And it'll be cool to see how, you know, the Hadoop way of doing things really simplifies that. Now, this is all... I'm really jealous, Deepak, of your ability to understand the stuff better than most.
Well, I don't know about that. I make attempts, and I think I just have to because I have no choice. This is fascinating stuff, and you know, I'm kind of glad that I, you know, thanks to the wonderful world of the internet, we know these folks who are sort of pushing the envelope, so to speak. So. Yeah, we are about, 37 minutes into our, 36, 37 minutes into our episode. And I think we're pretty much out of sort of.
Yeah, maybe we'll keep this one short because it has been a while since we had an episode. And, let's just say I've been fairly busy myself, so it's like I feel a little shallow in my ability to understand a lot of the heavy chemistry that we've already talked about. But
Yeah, and hopefully over the next few weeks we'll be able to get regular episodes in as well,
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
get back into the flow. And we definitely want to
Yeah,
bring a
we
few
are
other
very
people on
close
to the
to,
show. I know
well,
we've talked about
we are
it.
talking to a few of people like Ricard. I keep calling him Mark Vidal. Sorry,
Ricardo.
Ricardo Vidal from from Mendeley. And we might have him on. Actually, we will have him on once we can figure out a mutual time. And let's see. Yeah, this should be fun.
Yeah, we didn't go into any rat holes today. I think that's why I finished in 36 minutes, because we have every now and then we find some topic we want to rant
Yeah.
about and just go down this rat hole. Yeah, talking of rat holes, or the opposites of rat holes, I visited a facility that you've
Oh,
been at last
outstanding.
week. It was
Cool.
at Janalia Farms. It is absolutely f those guys
Well,
have money.
there's what's the Hughes corpus at? 36 billion, and they have some smart fund managers. They actually didn't fee I think they got out of the stock market like crazy in the last after the big bust of 90, whenever that was, the dot-com bubble burst. And I mean, I'm in a Hughes lab, so let's just say, yeah, it's good to be Hughes.
Yeah, the best part, the best part of the farm was having a
Oh,
steak
and
for four
wait, you
dollars
don't
and
drink
fifty
whiskey, do
cents.
you? Oh,
I
okay,
do, but I
so
had to drive, so I didn't drink.
they have like all these outstanding single malts at the bar that you were at. It's I remember going up
Yeah, so
there,
that's
and
exactly.
we actually did have a card because I was at the Hughes, I was a postdoc at the Hughes conference, and I went up to the bar, and I managed to I thought surely my card will run out, and I got like two whiskeys, and the guy's like, okay. Then I went back after some time and I got one more, and he's like, he kept charging it. I was like, how much money is on this? He's like, I think $10. I was like, I've had three single malts. He's like, yeah, it's like $2 or something for each. And I said, oh my goodness, I'll become an alcoholic or something if I worked at Janelia Farm. But
No.
anyway,
Yeah, but the
yeah,
thing is, I think
exactly.
those guys
No,
never
it's a great
leave, right?
environment too, and
Yes.
they have all their reconfigurable labs. And did you see their compute compute clusters? The
No, we talked
yeah,
about
I
them a
walked
lot, but
around.
I
They
didn't see
have
them.
their fly facility is amazing. It's fully roboticized, and every vial is like indexed by a robot and put away and stashed away. And it seems to be a great place to work at. I mean, when I went there, they had just gotten started. And the Howard Hughes conferences are held there every other year, I think. And I don't know. I guess I
Yeah.
won't get a chance to go back, but someday.
Yeah, no, it was definitely cool. And sort of with
Oh
that,
yeah,
do you have
sure.
any
Go
links for
ahead.
us this
I'll
week?
let
I
you get
noticed, I think, you put something up on
Yeah, so
Delicious.
this link I think came from of somebody on friend feed. It must be the Paolo or anyway, whoever it is, I'm sorry, I'll put your name in the show notes, but it's was it
This
Adam
sounds like
Kraut? Okay.
Adam Kraut, actually. Looking just look could be just not
Wait, you're
looking
talking
at
about
the
the free
kind of things it
programming
has
books
in
one?
there.
Oh, so,
No,
all right,
I'm
never
talking a
mind.
different
So
one.
my link of the week is free programming books. It's basically a list of programming books, which are mostly PDF, or there's a lot of free books on here, and it's alphabetically organized. And let's just say, for any programming language you can think of, there is a free book that you can find here. Now, of course, I mean, a lot of these are indexed in Google
Oh,
too,
lovely.
because they're free and fully available. But there are some real awesome gems here, like I talked about learning Haskell, which I've started as a side project along with Python, and Chris Lasher I guess picked it up too. And Haskell, there's like four books, two books actually for Haskell. So this is an awesome link, and sorry, I'm losing my voice here. So That's my free book. My link for the week is a list of free programming books from ebooksdirectory.com.
Alrighty, that's cool. Yeah, I actually thought you were going to have another one. We'll leave that for maybe some other time. I'm going to keep that just in case. The one I want to actually point to is a site called Tricky, Tricki, tricky.org. So Tricky is a wiki-style site that is intended to, and I'm just reading off their page, intended to develop into a large store of useful mathematical problem-solving techniques. Some of these techniques will be very general, while others will concern particular sub-areas of mathematics. All of these are techniques that are used regularly by mathematical problem solvers at every level of experience. So that's really cool. For example, you can have problems like, to find a rational with low denominator given near a given real, use continued fractions is sort of a
What'd you say the site
approach to
was?
do it. So
TR.
basically, you have a mathematical. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Tricki dot
Tricky.
org.
Interesting.
Yeah. So keeping on with our sort of with our mathematical theme, which we kicked off with Wolfram Alpha. So it's basically articles on various mathematical problems. Make your method keep the symmetries of the problem. How do you do that? And so on. So, again, it's one of these knowledge bases that becomes easy to, so as they call it, it's a repository of mathematical
Outstanding.
know-how. So that's
Cool, we
my
had
link of the week.
chemistry and mathematics. This is quite something.
Yeah, it's a little different from my usual programming
Exactly.
and
We're gonna have to change our
biology
title, I think. From everything from
coast to coast chemistry.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think we'll be back with life
No,
science in
hey,
our
I
next
don't think anything we
next week
talked
our
about
next
was very
yeah.
life's, I mean, was very specific only to chemistry. But yeah, you can kind of say that, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll be back to the biological sciences soon. I heard that sort of talking about biological sciences, that do our iGEM episode got
Hey,
picked up by
yeah,
a lot
that
of
was
people, it
awesome.
looks like
I
it.
saw, as I was mentioned earlier, the DIY bio forums are thanks for the good words, guys. We did check it out, and it's very nice to hear the feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, as always, you can write to us at hurry at bioscreencast.com, HARI at bioscreencast.com, or leave us a note on our friend feed room for Coast to Coast Bio, or and you can always subscribe to the podcast using iTunes or via spokenword.org. And if I've not missed anything, I guess
Hey,
this
and we
is
should mention
Deepak
our
signing out.
friend feed room URL as well. It's
Yeah. It's friendfeed.com/
coast bio. So it's coast to coast with dashes
I forgot.
linking the
Okay.
words. Coast to coast bio with dashes linking the words.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
All
Yeah, bye.
righty. Cheers, Hari. Talk to you next week.